Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Janine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hey there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Today's episode, I'm going to be talking about balneal therapy. What the heck is that, you might be thinking? It is the bathing in mineral springs. I'm coming off of a trip to British Columbia, and we stayed at a hot springs called Halcyon Hot Springs. And it got me to thinking that, you know, there's a lot that we don't know about hot springs benefits. There's a lot of stories, of course, over time. But really, what happens when you go and soak yourself in hot spring? What's going on with your body? What kind of benefits can you expect? And what kind of things should you be looking for to keep yourself safe in choosing a hot springs? So I'm going to talk a little bit about the background on all of this mineral springs bathing and give you a little thought, maybe some food for thought as to why you might want to go look for one in your area. All right, so it's postulated that balneal therapy produces something called a hormesis effect. Yes, hormesis sounds like a weird condition. But what it is it's an adaptive response to intermittent stressors in a cell or an organism that, as a result of low dose exposure to increasing amounts of a substance or condition. Okay. In English, basically what hormesis is it is a response that your body creates to low-dose stressors. In the case of mineral springs, you're looking at heat, you're looking at cold if you choose to do some of the cold plunges, but you're also looking at the different minerals, in particular sulfur. Because in high amounts, sulfur can be toxic, but in low amounts, it can be just a little bit of a stressor to the body that causes the body to give a desired response. So what I'm saying here is small amounts of sulfur can be good for you, and I'm going to tell you all about it. Since sulfur is kind of the most researched of all of the minerals that you might find in a hot springs. Now, you may say that, well, I've heard a lot about magnesium, things of that nature. Yes, magnesium typically has been researched in terms of bathing therapy, such as hydrotherapy, but not as much in terms of its benefits in mineral springs. And in fact, most of the research on magnesium in mineral springs hasn't been very positive. It just basically says that the magnesium isn't getting into the bloodstream as one would think from a hot spring. So not sure why. Maybe there's other types of factors involved that would keep the magnesium out in this case. If you think about just general law of nature in terms of flow of minerals, if you're in a solution, meaning water, that has more molecules in it than you have inside you, those molecules are going to want to flow into your body. Now, if there's only one type of molecule, such as magnesium, in the case of like an Epsom salt bath, that might be the case that it would drive in more. But in the case of having multiple minerals, say in a mineral spring soup of sorts, it might have a case in terms of there's competition for the minerals to get into the body. So that's just my take on it. I've not done any research, but that's what I'm finding in terms of looking through all of the different research articles out there. Now, the interesting thing about this concept of hormesis and it's in the adaptive response to low-dose stressors over time is that exercise and dietary restrictions such as intermittent fasting are really good examples of hormesis, because exercise is going to be a heat stressor on the body. We're going to warm up the body. And intermittent fasting stresses the body a little bit because we're going to restrict food for time periods. And so these things are not considered extremely harmful in low doses, meaning controlled time frames. So controlling your amount of time that you're in the hot springs is key, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But in the case of hot springs, we're looking at mild heat stress over time, or mild cold stress if you choose to do the alternating hot and cold therapy. Exercise, like I mentioned before, is also similar in this case. And it's also been considered that for folks that are unable to exercise due to chronic pain, due to obesity, whatever may be the issue that the person is unable to physically exercise, it's been postulated that mineral therapy, in terms of hot spring therapy, can be beneficial because the effects are similar to exercise, which is pretty stinking cool. So now another thing that happens with heat is that it activates our HPA axis. So this is our hypothalamic pituitary axis. This is how we process stressors. This is how we deal with stress. And so beta endorphins are released, which is that like, hey, I'm soaking in the hot tub, I feel so good kind of feeling. You also get the release of cortisol and the release of catecholamines. Now, for some people, we might be thinking, oh my gosh, I'm already stressed. Why would I want to give my body even more stress? Well, low doses of stress over time have been found to be beneficial for response and tolerance. Unfortunately, a lot of us have stressors that are dramatic stressors, that are huge impact, high stressors, not low dose stressors. So if we kind of expose ourselves to certain things consistently over time, it means we adapt to them better. And in the case of heat stress, exercise, the more you exercise, the more you're going to improve your stress response. That's just how it works. Same thing goes if you had a hot tub versus a mineral springs versus a sauna. The heat stress actually helps with your stress response and tolerance over time, but it also protects against oxidative stress and toxins in the body. Because what does heat do? It allows you to sweat. It improves your circulation. So you're going to mobilize toxins that you want to get out of your body that if you didn't do these things, it would not normally move. So that's one thing to think about here. Another cool effect with heat therapy and balneotherapy therapy in particular is that it can improve insulin resistance, which is a huge factor for a lot of people. And if you listen to my previous podcast where I was talking about the connection between blood sugar imbalances and thyroid issues, folks that have thyroid issues, hydrotherapy can be really beneficial. And balneotherapy, bathing in mineral springs, can also be very, very beneficial. Now, each person has their own tolerance in which their body can tolerate the heat and the temperatures, which is why I always recommend if you're going to try this out, you want to go from the cooler, more tolerable, so cooler heat based pools and work your way up, not spending more than 10 to 15 minutes, maybe even 5 minutes at a time, because for some people who are new to it, you can get dizzy, you can feel a little off. Of course, going into the whole situation hydrated is going to help because that's a whole nother thing. Now, in addition to insulin resistance being improved by the balneotherapy, we've also found that balneotherapy is amazing for chronic inflammation. I think for a lot of people, it's no secret that mineral pools and, you know, magnesium baths, so Epsom salt baths, all this stuff, we know it's good for joint and muscle aches and pains. But I don't think a lot of people realize how good these therapies are also for the lung, the heart, the digestive system, the endocrine system, our neurological system, even our joints can get increased circulation, not just the pain relief from the endorphins, but increased circulation and improvement in terms of moving in some anti-inflammatory fluids and moving out those chronic inflammatory proteins that have been sitting in the joints for a long period of time. There's a ton of research on how amazing balneotherapy is for osteoarthritis. And I think most of the stories we hear in terms of, I went to a hot springs for 2 weeks and my arthritis was drastically improved. You know, you'll hear tons of stories. You'll even hear a lot of stories back from the early 1900s, late 1800s, in terms of improvement with lung conditions, asthma, improvement with young folks such as in their 20s who were having chronic joint pain, you know, they came to the hot springs barely able to walk and they left walking just fine. You know, you think about it in terms of, were those individuals extremely deficient in certain minerals? Do they need those minerals? I don't know. I'll talk about that in terms of what minerals are found in these particular hot springs, and it might make some sense to you as to why someone who is completely nutritionally depleted might actually benefit from using hot springs on a regular basis. Now, some of the research has gotten pretty nitpicky in terms of looking at folks' blood lab levels of interleukins, meaning a lot of the inflammatory signaling markers, such as IL-6 and IL-1B, tumor necrosis factor alpha, so TNF-alpha, if you've heard of any of that stuff. These all can be reduced with hot springs therapy. Now, C-reactive protein, another marker of inflammation in the body. It's also sensitive for inflammation in terms of cardiovascular inflammation. This has also been found to be reduced. So that's pretty cool. And the bonus of all these decreases is an increase in human growth factor, so IGF-1. And so many people want to know how to naturally improve their growth factor. Hey, hot springs, there you go. So that's a great way to improve your metabolism. Now let's talk about hot springs in particular. Like, what the heck are they? Because I think a lot of us are like, okay, we've got hot water coming out of the earth. Where's it coming from? What's happening here? It's actually heated geothermically, meaning that geothermal heat is coming from the core of the earth. And hot springs typically will occur in areas where there's been heavier volcanic activity. So this is why the Ring of Fire area, meaning, you know, Japan, Asia, and west coast of the U.S., Alaska, you know, we've got a lot of different hot springs in this area. Also, the Rocky Mountains have a lot. British Columbia's Rocky Mountains have a lot of hot springs as well. And then we have Europe, because we do tend to sometimes forget that there was some volcanic activity over there. Iceland has their Blue Lagoon. So there's a lot of areas in which we have hot springs. Germany, Bath, England. There are some very famous areas even in Hungary and Bulgaria that have some amazing hot springs that have been used for thousands of years. So hot springs have high mineral content water. And the reason that there's high minerals in hot springs is because hot water can hold more dissolved solids than cool water. So this means that any given hot spring can contain anything and everything from calcium to magnesium to chloride, sodium, potassium, silica, zinc, boron, lithium, manganese, iron, sulfur, and even radium. Now, before you freak out and go, oh my gosh, radium, remember what I said about hormesis. Small amounts of a stressor to the body can be beneficial. There's a hot springs called Radium Hot Springs in British Columbia. Amazing place. Have not heard of anyone dying from going there. Maybe there is stories. I could be proven wrong, but it seems to be beneficial for a lot of people. Now, notice that I mentioned chloride, sodium, potassium. These guys are electrolytes. So for anyone that has an electrolyte imbalance, hot springs can be actually beneficial. In fact, most of those items that I just rattled off that can be in hot springs are in multivitamins. It's like a multiple mineral soup that you can bathe yourself in. Now, like I said before, we don't have a lot of data on how much gets absorbed into the bloodstream. But what I do know about vitamins and minerals is the body's going to take in what it needs and it's going to dump what it doesn't. So maybe there is a little bit of a balance going on between your skin and these minerals and how much gets in and how much doesn't. Now, keep in mind, our epidermis, which is our outer layer of our skin, it's tough. It doesn't want to let things in. It's very selective. But we do know with research that we can absorb vitamins and minerals across the skin. There are vitamin and mineral patches as alternatives to multivitamins. And, you know, there's no specific research study that evaluated all of the rates and extents of these minerals going across. But I can't help but believe, based on the stories and how I feel and how others that I know feel going in and out of these hot springs, that something's happening. Maybe it's all endorphins, but something's definitely happening. And maybe if it's more of a higher concentration of sulfur in the hot spring, then it might be that the sulfur is doing a lot of the benefits for you. Now, I will admit that I don't really love the rotten egg smell of the sulfur hot springs. Probably no one really does. But if I look at my history in terms of hot spring affinity, I really like my sulfur-based hot springs. In fact, one of my favorite hot springs is called Pagosa Hot Springs in Colorado. It's just outside of Durango. It is a great place, but boy, it can get pretty stinky. But man, after skiing at Wolf Creek, hitting up some powder, it feels amazing. Recovery is like boom, quick. And my recent stay at Halcyon Hot Springs by Nacusp, British Columbia, I also noticed quite a difference with my recovery as we were mountain biking and paddleboarding quite a bit, and I wasn't very sore. So there's something to that sulfur. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about the sulfur so that we've got that science behind it, because yes, as you know, I like the science behind things. Now, there's a lot of body changes that are induced just by warm water immersion. And like I mentioned before, they're very similar to exercise. And number one is vasodilation, so opening up your blood vessels. And I'll be honest, a lot of people do not have great circulation. That's why I did a whole podcast on nitric oxide in circulation. And with the warm water, you're going to have increased blood flow, like I just said, because you vasodilate. You're opening up your vessels, so you're going to increase your blood flow. And in that case, you're going to reduce arterial stiffness, because if you have sucky circulation, excuse my language, but if your circulation just really sucks, you're probably going to be suffering with some really hardened arteries. Now, arteries harden with age, but they can also harden based on a lot of different things that happen in life, genetics, smoking, etc. Now, the other big thing that happens when we open up our vessels is we can get oxygen to areas that we need it. One to heal, one to help us just regulate, one to detoxify. I mean, oxygen's huge in the body. Now, the other part about getting more blood flow is that we have easier time sleeping with that as well. So all of the hydrotherapy can also help with sleep. So if you're suffering with chronic sleep issues, you might want to consider some hydrotherapy with the hot water. Now, the other big thing with improvement of our circulation, we're going to have improvement of cardiovascular function as a whole, because you're going to have more cardiac output, because you're going to be pumping blood harder because it's warmer in there. And you're going to have an amped up, if you will, function of your cardiovascular system. Now, at the same time, while we have our vessels dilating, this is where we want to be careful, especially if anyone has already some issues with their cardiovascular system. This is why you want to ease in, go slow, don't spend too much time in the hot springs right away. Like, don't go immerse yourself for 45 minutes. You're going to come out so dizzy. 5 minutes, you know, then switch to a warmer pool, kind of walk around a little, just ease in, take it easy. So let's go a little bit more into the sulfur for a bit. Now, I talked about my favorite hot springs being Pagosa Springs by Durango, Colorado. I also really love hot sulfur springs in Granby. This is another Colorado hot springs. And if you live in Colorado, if you're any of my former patients from Colorado, these are amazing places. Hit them up. Do it. You want to get the benefits of these places. So sulfur. I said I was going to get to it, and then I started talking about hot water. Sorry about that, guys. Now we're getting to the sulfur detail. I digressed a little bit. So sulfurous mineral water exerts anti-inflammatory and anti-itching effects. In fact, sulfur has been known to be really great for skin in particular, leg ulcers, and also yeast infections on the skin. It's one of the things that if I look at my skin, because I've had a long history of issues with yeast internally and on my skin, while I lived in Colorado, I did not have one skin issue in terms of yeast, and we were regularly going to these hot springs. Now, since I've lived in Washington, I've battled with a little bit of issues. And so I'm wondering if that is the connection there, just to put myself into the mix here. Now, interestingly enough about sulfur is that hydrogen sulfide gas is what is actually in the hot spring, because you can smell it, right, the rotten egg smell. It gets transformed to sulfur on your skin. And that's how you end up getting the actual benefit. Now, the other thought process here in terms of sulfur, which was described back in 1913 by a fellow named McMurdy, he reported that the sulfur may be converted to something called pentathionic acid. I think I said that right. I'm no biochemistry major here. But this conversion of sulfur to the pentathionic acid could explain the antibacterial and antifungal properties of sulfurous mineral waters, which is pretty stinking cool. So there you have it. Now, sulfurous water has also been successfully used for contact dermatitis, eczema, psoriasis, atopic dermatitis, because it's been postulated with research that the sulfur even helps to regulate immune system function in the skin. So if you have a chronic skin condition, it may very well be worth it to seek out a hot springs and go a couple times throughout the year, or even see if you could stay there and spend a week bathing and see what happens with your skin. Now, when I talked about hot water and it being beneficial for capillary vasodilation, hydrogen sulfide gas is also responsible for capillary vasodilation. So capillaries are your tiny little vessels that come up to your surface of your skin. They're all throughout our body. And these guys are typically where folks tend to have issues with circulation, like cold hands and feet. It's capillary issues there. Now, interestingly enough, there's also some suspicion that since hydrogen sulfide is a gas, it can also be absorbed through your mucosal tissues, because it can get in your nose, it can get in your mouth because it's being emitted above the water there. I'm not sure the exact mechanism, but it's also been noted that because it can get in your mucosal tissue, it can also get up to the brain, it can also get to certain organs, as well as it's absorbed transdermally and transdermally across your mucosal membranes, so areas in your mouth and in your nose. Now, I don't recommend putting your head underwater in some of these hot sulfur springs. There are some amoebas and things of that nature that could get in, especially if you're in a non-maintained hot springs. So by that, I mean if you're in a rural hot springs, that's the natural pools, not like a resort. I do recommend doing resorts for the safety, because resorts are monitored, they're managed, there's someone looking out for the cleanliness of the facility, whereas a lot of these natural hot springs, you don't know what's happening there. And I'll talk a little bit later in terms of how to notice if you're going to go to a rural hot spring, which by all means, these are really cool. But if you're going to go to one, you want to look at the background on it and take a look at how the water's flowing too. So we'll talk about that in a second. Now, in terms of safety, just in general, I've kind of mentioned a couple things. Obviously, we don't want too much sulfur from a hot spring, and there are ones that are going to have a very high concentration of sulfur, and these are going to be some of your natural pools that you may come upon, and these ones might be 111 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. At 111 degrees Fahrenheit, this can denature your cells, meaning your enzymes can break apart. So you probably don't want your tissue to degrade. So you got to watch some of these backwoods hot springs. Now, if they've been talked about for years and someone is maintaining them, they're absolutely safe. For example, I just went to Halfway Hot Springs in British Columbia. There's a fella, his name's Bob, I got to meet him. He is the maintainer or the maintenance guy of these rural hot spring pools. And he was there cleaning up, making sure things were looking good. We got yelled at because my dog, Bear, didn't want to get out of a hot spring, even though we knew he wasn't supposed to be in there. Sorry, Bob. My dogs are terrible. We won't bring them back. But nevertheless, if you see dogs in hot springs, not good. And believe me, we are trying to fight mine to get him out of the hot springs. So my lesson learned, don't bring your dogs to hot springs. Normally I wouldn't, but it was warm that day and we didn't have anywhere to leave them. So, all right, I digress. Let's get back to what does a good hot spring look like compared to a bad hot spring. You want one that has water that's constantly moving. So it's being changed over. In an average hot spring, it's like 2 hours and all the water will be completely changed over, which is really awesome. If you see stagnant water in a particular hot spring, that's a red flag. You might be looking at some amoebas or even something called red spider mites that could be growing in that hot spring. So I would be careful. I really, really would. In fact, red spider mites have been noted in hot springs in California, Idaho, Nevada, and Oregon. And you can't really see them with the naked eye. So you'll know if you've got one if you start itching. But you just want to be careful in that case. Amoebas are another big deal, mostly noted in terms of a death in Texas, Arizona and Florida in particular. These amoebas they get in through your nose or your mucosal tissue. So the idea is don't put your head under the water. And then, like I mentioned before, stagnant water. This is a safety hazard because if the water's not constantly flowing, you're not recycling the minerals in the water, but you're also not recycling people's stuff. So gross. So just make sure if you are going to any backcountry hot springs that someone told you about, just make sure that they look well maintained and that the water's moving very well through there. And you'll be able to tell by flow the water in and out. So how often can you hot spring? What I have found in terms of pouring over a ton of research is that 15 to 20 minutes of submersion to your neck, not your head, at 104 degrees Fahrenheit, 40 degrees Celsius, up to 3 days a week for 8 weeks maximum, has been like the upper limit of benefit. Now, what do I mean on that? You can go less, but a lot of the research is showing consistency is key. There's no way in heck I'd be able to get to hot springs 3 days a week for 8 weeks. There's just no way. But I did find in some research that if people spent a week and bathed 15 to 20 minutes a day for a week, there was some benefit. I also noticed that there was some research on once a week. Really, as with anything, if you're trying to use the hot springs to help with a certain condition, regularity would be key. If there is a hot springs near you, then I'd say maybe try to get there like once a week for a couple weeks and then taper it down to twice a month, once a month, something of that nature. When I lived in Colorado, we were going almost once a month, so every couple months. So just some food for thought there in terms of how it helps with my skin yeast infections. And in particular, I have something called tinea versicolor, which leaves me with white blotches on my skin. And I've been dealing with that since I was about, I don't know, 8, 9, somewhere like that. I was young. And it comes and goes based on what's happening in my body. But when I was in Colorado, I never had any issues. So something to think about. I've definitely connected it to that. Now, in terms of the hot and cold plunge, meaning contrast hydrotherapy, if you will, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I tried to find research in terms of like a protocol to give you or something that found the best efficacy, and honestly, there was nothing out there. What I did find was that 11 to 15 minutes at 59 degrees Fahrenheit and 15 degrees Celsius, and alternating between that and a pool that's around 104 would help to pump the lymphatic system and improve circulation. So what do I mean by pumping the lymphatic system? We have lymph that moves next to our blood vessels. Lymph carries fats in it. It also carries toxins in it. And to be able to detoxify effectively, you want to get that lymphatic system moving. One of the other ways to get it moving is dry brushing. But you can help with like a big boost of movement, which would be stronger than dry brushing, would be doing some contrast hydrotherapy by submersing yourself up to your neck for the 11 to 15 minutes in the cool water and then alternating with the hot water. Now, in terms of how much would you wait between cold and hot, what I've seen is people go directly from one pool to the other. So I would try it that way. Now, I'll be honest with you. I tried this while we were at Halcyon Hot Springs. I'll be honest, I hadn't tried it before because I have a hard time with really cold water. I don't know what it is. My body just does not do well. I need to ease myself in. Probably the concept, if we go back to the beginning of this podcast in terms of hormesis, I need a lower dose stressor of cold versus going right from the 59 degrees to the 104 degrees. It's possibly too much of a stressor for my body. I did try it, did it once at Halcyon, but I found that I did much better going from the 86 degrees pool to the 104 degree pool as my contrast hydrotherapy. So something to think about. For you folks out there, I do highly recommend, if you're not used to going into something that cold and your body doesn't really do well with cold, you might want to baby step into it and find a lesser contrast and then work your way up. So what's the best thing to do once you're in the hot spring and submersed? Just sit there, float? Like, what do you do? It depends on what you're going for. If you have a lot of pain in your joints or muscles, I recommend some mobility work and just move your joints around, do some stretching, maybe even some gentle massage if you've got an area that's really locked up. And when I talk about gentle massage, let's say your calves are super tight and maybe the side of your calves are super tight. A lot of times I'll have people like pin a certain part of the muscle and then take their other fingers and kind of just slide it downwards down the outside of, say, the calf. The pin and stretch, if you will. Or I think a lot of people really like my recommendation of spreading taffy. So you could put both of your hands on the, let's say, the right side, the lateral side of your lower leg on your calf, and you could take your second, third, and fourth digits and just kind of spread them away from each other. So one's going up towards your knee and the other one's going down towards your ankle. And it's kind of like the pressure of if you were spreading taffy. I don't know, just something to think about. But what that is a myofascial technique. So gentle massage to work on the skin and muscle. So something to think about while you're in there. I prefer to do that. And then, you know, if you're really working on stress reduction, float around. Just relax. And if you're there at night, man, look up at the stars and just zone out. So I mentioned the details in terms of how to know if a hot springs is clean. And I'll be honest with you that a lot of the infestations, like I mentioned, of the mites and the amoebas, these were in natural hot springs, not in facilities. A lot of the facilities, such as Halcyon Hot Springs, where I just came from, they have certain systems where they actually are cooling the water even further from what's coming out of the Earth's core. I was told at Halcyon that the water comes out a lot hotter than 104 degrees, but they cool it down so it's tolerable. Plus, like I mentioned before, 111 degrees can be damaging to cells as it breaks apart your enzymes and protein structures. So another big thing to think about if you're using a hot spring or found a hot spring that is not regulated, assess the temperature. If it feels too hot, like it's burning your skin, it's probably not worth it to try to get in there. It's probably going to do more damage than good. So keep that in mind. But I highly recommend you going and checking out some hot springs near you. In my podcast notes, I'm going to put a link to helping you find some hot springs in your area. And also all of the research that I compiled to do this podcast so that I had some intelligent answers for you in terms of what's happening with your body with the the balneal therapy. So check those out if you're interested at drjkrausnd.com. Now, one of the things I like to mention about hot springs before I go to a lot of really technical, if you will, treatments with patients is that for chronic pain, but for also a lot of patients who have chronic inflammation or chronic infections, such as Lyme, such as mono, things of that nature, hot springs can be really amazing for you because what they're doing is creating a fever in the body. And what fevers do is help us to fight infections. So for those of you out there that have chronic illnesses that you've been told to take a whole bunch of herbs and supplements and all these different things and nothing's really working, consider hot and cold therapy, consider hot therapy, consider balneotherapy in mineral springs if you have some near you, or target your vacations to go head up to a hot springs if you don't live near one, because I've seen a lot of really good results in this case. Now, another question that you might be having right now is, okay, say there's like no possible way that you can get to a hot springs. Okay. Can you mimic a hot springs in your hot tub or your tub in general? If you have a hot tub that already is using chlorine, no, because things like sulfur will react with the chlorine, magnesium will react with chlorine, and can cause some serious chemical reactions. So if you already have a hot tub that has chlorine in it, don't add anything to it, but do consider that hot tubs can be beneficial. So can infrared saunas. Any type of heat therapy can be extremely beneficial to help with chronic infections. And I do recommend over time that folks with chronic infections do consider doing contrast hydrotherapy, so submersing themselves in some colder temperatures. Maybe you start at the end of a shower with 5 seconds of cooler water and dial the temperature down over time and see what you can tolerate. Just don't shock yourself and cause yourself a negative reaction in terms of going too cold too fast for too long. But for those of you with chronic infections, this is something that you might want to consider for helping with your therapy. Okay, so that sums it up for balneotherapy and hot springs therapy. I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. If you did, share it with your friends. Give me a rating on iTunes. I'd really appreciate it. And if you're looking for any information on hot springs, head over to my website at drjkrausnd.com for more information. Alrighty, have a great day, whatever you're doing. Hey everybody, Dr. Janine Krause here. If you liked what you heard today, then head over to drjkrausnd.com to find my free resources and information to know when I post something new that's juicy that you might want to check out. Plus, head over to where you get your podcasts and like, subscribe, and write a review to help get the word out about me and help others at the same time to find me. It really does help, and I really appreciate all of your reviews.